Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty to welcome back for the first time author, all around, how can I put this, mega conscientious person and giver of hugs. That's my crown jewel of your description, giver of hugs, Miss Elsie Gilmore. Elsie, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very happy to be here. And yes, I think the world needs more hugs than ever right now.
Yes, and that's why I said that's the crown jewel of your description. I feel like we cannot leave out the giver of free hugs. That's an important bit now more than ever, like you said. And we did have one. Your original episode was one where we had Ghost in the Machine, and I'm so glad that we've now come full circle and you're back. So thank you so much for coming back.
No problem. It happens.
Oh, man. That was a good one. We toiled with that one for a minute. Do we put it out with closed captioning, or is that going to make it so people don't pay attention? And it was one of those things where it was like, we got to have her back. So thank you so much for coming back. So I kind of want to bring everybody up to speed with all of the goings on that you have. I think the first thing I'd like to talk about is your book. If you could tell us the title, tell us a little bit about what inspired the book, because that was what our initial conversation was. But now the world has bloomed, for want of a better way of putting it. And I want to talk a little bit about that. But let's start at the start with your book a little bit.
Okay. So the title of my book is How to Find Joy in a Capitalist Hellscape. And I wrote this book because of all the bickering I see on social media. And I couldn't help but think, number one, people are very unhappy, because when you're mean and nasty, it means you're unhappy about something. So we're not focusing enough on our personal joy, right? And that allows us to get tangled up in these social media wars that do nothing for anyone, really, except make us all even more unhappy. And I also knew that we have big problems, and we're not going to come close to solving any of these big problems if we can't all get along, or at least a bunch of us.
Yeah, getting along is a crucial portion of the show.
Yes.
Why do you think it is, or what made it so it became more apparent to you that people weren't finding their joy in things? Was it just like the vitriolic nature of interaction?
Yeah, absolutely. Just like being mean, you know. Again, mean people aren't happy, because if you were happy, you wouldn't just go around being mean to everyone. Yeah, that's the big thing. Just like there's so much, you know, and everyone's unhappy about something else, but happiness is, some of it could be your circumstances, but it's also how you react and how you interpret the world.
Why do you think that's gotten so distorted? Or what do you think plays into the distorting of that, I guess?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that's a pretty obvious answer. The media, the social media algorithms, right, that point us to things that make us more mad.
Yeah.
And point us to, like, our echo chamber, which doesn't help us open up to other people's experiences and form empathy and things like that.
So did just to stick with the book for a minute, did you have experience writing before this, or was this just something you felt so strongly about, you're like, I'm going to figure out how to write now? And what was day one like when you decided this book has to be a thing?
Sure. I've been a writer since for about 23-ish years. So
awesome.
You don't have to be published to be a writer. So
right.
I've written personal and professional blogs. I had a column in my hometown newspaper at one point. I've actually been publishing a Substack publication for 2 or 3 years now. Every Sunday, it's called Sunday Mornings in Bed.
Nice.
And so, yeah, I think I've always been a writer. This is just the first time I've published something.
So what was the day like when you said to yourself, I'm going to write a book?
Have you ever met a writer? If you had, you'd know there is no day. I was going to write a book for 6 years.
Oh.
And then finally, I wrote an entire book before this one, but I still haven't published it yet.
Mm.
And then this one seemed very important in a timely way.
Mm.
You know, like, I need to get this out before, you know, we have the next civil war.
Right. Well, how did you... I guess what the operative question for me is, what do you think people can do to help increase their chances of finding joy in said hellscape?
Right. So that's basically, this book is sort of a concise guide to things that probably seem obvious to a lot of people, but we clearly need a reminder. But there are things, some of the book is just purely about finding joy, and some is about rejecting the system, right? The capitalist system that's stealing our joy. So there's different aspects of it, personal and then community-wise, health-wise, just anything you can do to keep yourself healthier mentally and physically.
What do you think are some of the biggest things that we're overlooking given the hellscape that fall into those categories?
Well, I think there are some things that people don't want to do. Like some of the book focuses on not fighting with your fellow average Americans, because even if you don't like them, they are probably in much the same situation you are in. And so it would be better to save that energy and fight the people with the actual power, the people who are making all these decisions that make our lives worse.
What? Yeah, and that always seems to be the problem, since even Jim Morrison was singing about 5-1 when the people, the youth, had the numbers, but they still couldn't fight the power, as it were. Why do you think it can be, or we're at such a point now where we're almost back in that same scenario where, as you couch it, average Americans are the majority of us, yet we're still being marginalized and having our joy, at least if nothing else, made harder to get by so few people?
Well, it's the money, obviously. Money is power. And so we as a country, I shouldn't say that, the leadership in our country decided that corporations and billionaires should have more power. And now they do. And now it's very hard to get it back from them.
And do you feel that that all hinges on the fact that we, from a legal standpoint, can see corporations as individuals?
That's definitely a big part of it. Yeah, I still think that ruling is absolutely insane. But it's kind of, that's something that's been on a trajectory for decades, right, to get to that point, to give corporations more power. But if we had good leaders, you know, no company is guaranteed their charter. Companies have broken laws and been responsible for deaths of lots of people. And I really don't think we've ever revoked one of their charters. We rarely send CEOs to prison for the things that they oversaw, you know. And then we've got Luigi taking things into his own hands because he's so angry. I mean, because the insurance company was responsible probably for tens of thousands of people's deaths, but no one went to prison for that, and it was called business as usual.
Yeah, I guess that was going to be my next question. Do you see capitalism as the mechanism to create all of those scenarios you just described?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm actually working on a new sort of journal with prompts so people can explore their personal relationship to capitalism, because capitalism is a little like religion. Sometimes you're just born into it, right? And you don't question it because you think that's just normal and that's the way things have to be. But if you think about it a little while, you know, like, I don't think many of us really agree with a lot of the parts of capitalism, but we don't ever analyze that.
What do you think is the veil that keeps that from happening?
Well, again, I just think it seems normal, and that a lot of people don't see any alternative, and so they don't see a point in questioning it, you know? Except they should, because it makes many people's lives really challenging.
So it's more or less the byproduct of indoctrination, or just because we are means we do?
I mean, kind of, yeah.
How do you see any cycles like that ever being even disrupted?
I don't know. I mean, you know, people talk about general strikes, which is where a huge majority of people in the country would all not go to work. I mean, that doesn't really work for me because I work for myself. But if you work for someone else, you know, just a lot of people not showing up.
And historically speaking, we've had a problem with that just because of the sheer size of our country. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're I just watched this little weird futurist video about how in 20 whatever, the U.S. is going to be split into five countries, which I don't think is a terrible idea because, yes, countries like France is a great one because they really know how to stick it to stick it to capitalism. But they're so small that they can get a lot of them together and, you know, burn things.
Right.
Where here, we can't even agree on what we don't like, you know.
I was just
going
to say, I can't even agree what to burn or not to burn.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, that's an interesting thing. France and European countries and things like that, obviously they can be more proactive and things like that because they can get enough of a majority to make enough of a difference at once. Even if we do that here, we only do it in pockets and it's almost like a whack-a-mole type thing.
Yeah, I think it would be more of a regional thing.
Yeah. So when you talk about there being five Americas, I actually read a study where they were making a really interesting case to make five states out of California. So there's a whole bunch of different reasons to do that. But if you were to see something like that, and presumably one of these five Americas will be said hellscape, because somebody's going to want more hell, invariably, apparently. Where do you think something, what's the happy medium of these five? Where do you see like some of the give and take being a beneficial middle ground?
Well, I think the benefit of having our country be smaller countries is that the people living in them would have more power because, number one, they would probably agree more as a group, right? Because you would have like Texas, and not that everyone in Texas agrees on everything, but a lot of people in Texas agree on things. So the Northeast, a lot of people think the same way, you know? So I just think it, at the very least, it would give the people in those regions more power to work together, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess in some aspects, it's sort of the idea that, you know, a smaller group can play to its strengths easier.
Mm-hmm.
But then the flip side to that, which I'm always curious about what state of this experiment we're at. The flip side to that is, well, if you homogenize everybody, then in theory, the best ideas from the widest corners should all rise to the top. And then this is the idea of a free market capitalist society. And since we're in a melting pot, if we mix everybody together, instead of playing to the strengths of few, we invariably develop what could be the untold common denominator strength of many. But I'm wondering where we're at, where you see us at in that continuum.
I mean, the U.S. is, I mean, we've always had divisions, but I think a lot of the divisions now are caused, okay, by a couple things. One, our country is going to become majority minority. Isn't that what it is? When the majority of the people in our country will have previously been considered minorities.
Right.
Right. So I think that fuels a lot of the discontent, the divisions in this country. Because, you know, the people who used to rule this country were always white.
Right.
So I think in many ways this is them, their fear, right? This is fueled by their fear of not being able to do that anymore. But also just really, really social media. I remember when I didn't have to know what every person thinks about everything. And I was so much more happy then, you know, so.
Well, what do you think is the operative part of that, though, that you shouldn't have to know or that knowing is detrimental?
Both. I mean, I don't have to know because I don't have to go on social media, right?
Well, yeah. But it, in reality, it exists for anyone to know. So whether or not it was you, it's still a societal temptation. Or
right.
Any way you want to wrap it.
So people have always had terrible ideas. And I just remember, like, right after the election, and, like, many of my friends are Democrats, and they were suddenly, they suddenly felt so much more disdain for the people who voted for Trump, even though those people were the exact same people the day before.
Right.
I'm like, those people haven't changed. So I get you're unhappy that they voted for Trump, but why do you hate them more today? They were always going to vote for Trump. Well, not all of them. But so it's just, you know, it's just this, the division is so, like, it's, I put posts on Facebook regularly telling people not to be a-holes, you know, even when you start acting like an a-hole, you have been consumed, right? And if everyone's an a-hole on this side and that side, then we're just a country of angry people. Who then are the kind people? Who, you know?
Well, then I guess my question at that point is, what does kindness matter? If everyone's a-holes, what does kindness matter? We're already in a race to the bottom.
Well, it matters if it doesn't exist.
That's what I'm saying.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, and some of my friends get that, and others are like, I have a right to be an a-hole. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. But if that's one of the things you don't like about the people you don't like, why would you want to be just like them?
Good question.
Right?
This is, I guess, this begs the question, why do we have the temptation to justify hypocrisy if it feels like it serves our own ends?
I think, for one thing, being an a-hole feels good for a moment.
Yeah.
It's not good for you, but it feels good for a moment. And you can feel smug and you can feel smart. And but it doesn't, it just adds to this, what is ruining our democracy, you know? Not that I don't blame voters. I personally don't blame voters because I feel like what is happening and what has happened in our country is a failure of leadership. So if you run a marketing campaign and nobody buys your product, is that the consumer's fault?
Not likely.
Right? So I try to focus on holding leadership accountable and knowing that the voters in our country look at campaigns to decide who to vote for. And if you were not convincing or did not offer them anything valuable, then they are not going to vote for you.
Yeah, and I guess that's a lot the framework that I was brought up in my classes in social studies as a kid when they told us they're just teaching us to be a good citizen. But I feel like somewhere along the line we transitioned into some type of, I don't know how else to put it, campaigns reeked more of sales pitch than they did of come to my pep rally.
Well, so yes, and if your campaign never matches your actual time in office, then people will remember that too, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes.
But I feel like and this is where I was going with this, I feel like the bait and switch there, because that's the inevitability that you just said. I feel like the bait and switch then happened where our sales pitch now is a cult of personality. So it doesn't matter what I do as long as I am the guy I said I was. In this case, I'm the loud, obnoxious guy no one likes or whatever.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
If we're voting on cult of personality, then it doesn't matter what I do as long as I'm the asshole I said I was.
Sure, we could have the opposite type of cult of personality, you know, if we wanted to.
Of course. But, and I guess
because
that's,
a cult of personality doesn't have to be bad,
no,
right?
No, not generally. I mean, maybe Gandhi had a cult of personality as well. That part I don't know. I'm guessing Gandhi didn't host The Apprentice for a while, though.
Maybe it does. I don't know the definition of cult of personality. Maybe it is inherently bad. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess in the context of current American culture, I'm definitely couching it in a negative way.
Yeah.
Because I think the cult of personality then supplants your reason to critically think.
Yes. Yes. I mean, and I think in that case, there's an entertainment value, you know what I mean? And, but also I think many people have embraced the entertainment value because they just don't trust any politicians anymore. And they at least want to be able to stick it to the other side. You
yeah.
know?
Well, I guess that begs the question then, how do you think we ever get to the point where we do trust a politician? We do hold a leadership accountable to the point where we do be able to trust them again. What does that road look like?
Yeah, it's probably very messy. I don't, if I had that answer, I would be rich, but yeah, I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, what do you think are some of the things beyond what we can do in our own skin that we can try to impact the world around us a little bit? I mean, I know the free hugs is an excellent policy. This is an excellent step one.
Oh.
But
well, right. Anything you can do to bring joy to somebody else's life, right? Because a lot of people are suffering like mentally, emotionally, economically right now. And we just can't let people get hopeless because that's a very terrible place to be.
Of course. And that, I guess, that's where we start to get into the Ouroboros portion of the show, because what is suffering to some people is the byproduct of progress to another group of people.
Another group of people who are not negatively affected.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, that's just cruelty then, you know. It's
well, at bare minimum, it's a lack of empathy. But at at some point, if you weren't to say, well, I guess then let me ask you this first. Do you feel that the only way that, let's just say America now, just to keep conversation simple, do you feel that the only way to better America now from some of these fundamental standpoints we're talking about, our basic human interactions, is to not have our underpinning be capitalism? Is that the first pin that has to fall?
Capitalism causes a lot of problems. I don't think we will ever completely get rid of capitalism. Although, so a lot of people confuse commerce with capitalism, right? They see me online and say, oh, you're anti-capitalist and you're selling a book. That's hypocritical. Like, not really. Capitalism is like the exploitative part of commerce, right? It's not when you own a little neighborhood store. It's when you buy all the little neighborhood stores, right? And then set the prices on them. So maybe capitalism does need to go, but unfortunately, we've kind of created a monster now because we have all these billionaires who have unlimited money. And unless we get out the guillotines, which they did in France, I don't know what that fight will look like.
Yeah, I'm endlessly curious to that. Do you see capitalism as a zero-sum game?
I think many people who are doing it do. I mean, it's a zero-sum game for the environment, you know, if keep going
that's
this.
For sure.
I mean, and therefore humans, because really, the environment will regenerate itself. It's the human race that will die off because of all the pollution and crazy weather that's coming and all of that stuff. So, yeah, it's trying to keep every year using more resources on a planet with finite resources, you know. And so someday, I mean, that piper might need to be paid. Because we don't know when it is, people pretend that it's not a thing.
Yeah. Yes. That's a whole other can of maybe going extinct worms. But I ask because, you know, you can easily frame capitalism in the only way anybody gets better than anybody else is to capitalize. You have to take something from someone to better yourself. You're inevitably taking.
I mean, right. That's what it is. You take someone's labor or resources or, you know.
Right. And that's why I ask you if you see it as a zero-sum game. Because in the terms of actual money, whenever we've hit that road, we've just made more.
But so, it's not the amount of money. It's the discrepancy between billionaires and everybody else.
Right.
You know.
Right. And
Because if we are making so much more money, why don't we distribute it more evenly?
Why do you think that is?
Well, obviously, it's because the billionaires have all the power and they siphon off whatever they can, you know, and they've bought our politicians and they make our laws, you know, they're lobbyists. So it's really such a complicated thing now that they've created. Like, to dismantle it will be a monumental task.
Right. Do you think it's so much something that is uniquely created in our time, or do you think it's just we're now reinterpreting the fine print in a particularly egregious way?
Well, right. I mean, empires fall, right?
Yeah.
So this could be our moment.
Yeah.
Because fundamentally now it is dismantling our democracy. So when we're not a democracy anymore, I mean, I don't know what that means.
Then are we just like the third bodega from the sun?
Yeah, I mean, so it's very sort of uncharted territory for the United States, but we're a very young country. Like, this has probably happened multiple times in Rome, you know?
Yeah, I think about that a lot. You know, 250 years on the grand scheme of the world is we're a little baby country, so.
Yeah.
Okay, well, in the absence of, I should say, even with the dismantling of the democracy that we've seen now, the little chiselings away that has happened, and we don't even know what the more long-term implications of these things even are yet. In the vacuum of these things, do you see that capitalism then becomes like the framework to the entire thing? That now becomes our frame of reference for everything?
I mean, I feel like it already is.
Yeah, no, and to some degree, I can agree with that. But democracy is kind of the cloth between us and Oz, almost. You know what I mean? Or do you feel that way? I guess.
I mean, it's interesting because when people talk about communism, that's a political system and an economic system, you know. But we have two different. We have our economic system is capitalism and our political system is democracy, but they are very, very intertwined, you know. So I think one of them is going to eat the other one. You know, capitalism is eating our democracy, but then we'll be like an oligarchy, or I don't really think we've gotten to authoritarianism like full on yet. There's still a couple checks and balances left, but I just don't know how we're going to survive this, especially given the state of both political parties.
And do you think that's because we've just inadvertently wandered into a race to the bottom, or do you think that these are just like our worst demons we're just playing to right now?
It definitely was not inadvertent. I mean, everything that's happened in our country was deliberately done by someone, and it inflicted pain on other people.
True. But do you think that some of the things that were done deliberately yielded totally unforeseeable or unintended consequences?
I don't think so.
You think this is playing out according to plan?
Maybe not every single consequence, but most of them. I mean, these billionaires claim to be smart, although there's a few that I question. But I think they do things very deliberately, and I think they know what most of the consequences are going to be.
And it's just the impervious.
Well, like you said, it's not their consequences, it's somebody else's consequences. Right?
That's what I was just going to say. It's just the impervious nature of the bubble that they're in allows them to act in ways that the rest of us can't fathom.
Exactly. I mean, they're building bunkers and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So they kind of know something bad might happen because of what they've done.
Well, then that begs the question of the operative nature of the wealth gap in our country. And it's funny because if the particular county that we're in right now, we have wealth gap statistics equivalent to third world countries and very extreme places in the world where we have this extreme poverty and extreme wealth literally right next to each other.
Yep.
What do you think, how do you think we can ever change the public sentiment that billionaires need to have a 100% tax rate over $2 billion? Or how do you think we can ever chisel away at trying to redistribute that wealth? Because completely irrespective of your political nature or your feelings about things, that disparaging wealth fucks up the apple cart.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we just have to keep trying to educate people, but we need new leaders because our leaders are very much benefiting from the billionaires, right? And Wall Street and the big corporations. So until we get many, many more leaders who are not beholden to these very people, it's not going to work. Again, unless it's guillotines.
Yeah. How could that even happen?
To get new leaders?
That aren't going to succumb to, that's what I was saying, aren't going to succumb to kind of our lowest common denominator of me powerful, me greedy.
Well, here's the thing. I think power breeds corruption, which is why we need term limits. So we get the fresh people in, they have some great ideas, and then by the time they're getting corrupted, they're out of there.
So they're trying to fight the inevitable nature of people corrupting whatever power they have to meet their own ends.
I think so.
We're not going to defuse that bomb.
Well, we will if we put in term limits. If some of the leaders who don't want term limits will let us put in term limits.
Yeah. It wouldn't be the worst idea, probably.
But, I mean, as consumers, I think as consumers, we did help create some of these billionaires who have consumer products and who got wealthy on consumer products. So as consumers, we can change our consumer habits also and try to uncreate as much as we can some of the things we created, right? So,
well, it is hard to not buy the better mousetrap.
What do you mean?
In the case of Amazon in particular, if you want to characterize it as an egregious amount of wealth that was sucked up by that monolith, he built a better mousetrap. And for some people, and this is one that I don't often talk about, but it's one that comes up here and it causes me some cognitive dissonance. So maybe I can share this with you. Maybe you'll have some insight.
Okay.
I'm disabled. I'm visually impaired. I don't drive. I've never driven in my life. I'm a lifelong pedestrian. Growing up, especially in the Midwest, where it's winter seemingly 11 months out of the year, my life was frickin' difficult. Crossing the highway with bags of groceries, and I got my dad a DVD player, and it's negative 20 out, and I'm carrying this thing home for Christmas. These are things now that I look back at and it's like, oh my God, I lived in a different time. My disabled self now does not have to suffer the consequence of now in Florida getting scorched in my beautiful sun. So it's hard for me because there are people like me who are in way worse positions than me, where building that better mousetrap meant they finally caught their GD mouse. But then there's the flip side where it put the old mousetrap company out of business.
Right. So Amazon didn't build any mousetraps. They just sell other people's mousetraps, by the way. So,
well, that's the mousetrap, though.
But you can go on Amazon and find what you want and then go to that manufacturer's website, and they will also deliver it to you.
At an increased rate, though.
I see the same prices on Amazon as the manufacturer's websites now.
As long as anybody can ship it for free. I mean, let us not forget that was the cotter pin.
But again,
and I'm not defending Amazon. I'm just trying to.
Well, we have to think about what we are willing to trade for billionaires running our country.
So then this is where I'm kind of cycling back to. Is the idea not more that we have to discourage, just for the sake of discussion, this is the way I'm couching this, discourage the fact that the better mousetrap can lead you to the top of the heap? Or do you think it would be more advantageous for us to try to have some legislation that more appropriately taxed the people that got way beyond the top of the heap?
Both, all and everything, obviously. No, just consumers can't fix the whole thing, but we can make choices that are more in line with the kind of world we want to live in. But no, we also need legislation and all of that stuff, higher taxes.
True. Do you have any Is there any times you could point to where changing in consumer habits actually made any kind of legislative difference?
Legislative difference?
Yeah, because that's what we need, right?
I don't know, but it's definitely made a difference in the profit margin of the company that's being boycotted or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But it doesn't stop the snake from eating its own tail.
No. So I don't think consumer, like if a million consumers contacted their legislators, that might make legislative difference. Maybe. Again, it's very difficult when I know so many of our legislators are captured by all of these special interest billionaires and corporations.
How to throw the wrench in those spokes?
I mean, I have a list of the ones I would like to retire yesterday, but they don't seem to want to let go.
Yeah, I guess. When you get the death grip, it's like electricity. Well, one of the things that this made me think about, and stop me if you've heard this before, and I'll jump to the point of the matter. They say that a lot of people, we have the numbers, this is what we were talking about before, the general Americans, so to speak, have the numbers as opposed to the extraordinarily obscenely wealthy, however you want to characterize it.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that the quote-unquote average American will vote against their own interest. And they did a psychological study that showed it's because most people have a latent delusion that if they vote that way, then they'll ruin their chance to be a billionaire.
I mean, I've seen that before, and I don't think it's that common. I think many people are single-issue voters, and it's not that one. I think it's the one that gets them the most angry, right? So abortion, religion, things like that. On one side of the aisle. I don't think that's why the other side of the aisle votes necessarily. I don't know why they vote anymore.
Well, in large part, in this last go-round, at least as it was touted, it seemed to be economic-based.
I guess, yes. I do think part of it was economic-based. But every time one side is the presidency, the other side says the economy's terrible, even if it's not.
Yeah.
And then when the other person's president, the other people say the economy's terrible, even if it's not. So, you know, I don't know if anybody really knows how the economy is, but they will listen if you tell them it's bad.
That's what I'm saying. I don't even need to quantify the state of it. It's that more if you can tell them one reality is so, then they'll act upon it.
I do. I'm always saying I don't think people vote for the reasons we think they vote. You know, because one side will say the other side voted because of racism. I'm like, maybe a few people, but I don't think that's why most people voted for who they voted for. You know, I think we should listen to people, talk to people and listen to them and ask them why they voted the way they voted, if we would like them to vote a different way instead of just, I don't know, yelling at them.
Or even at bare minimum, understand each other a little more.
Right. I mean, and that's, social media is often talking at people, you know, not talking with people. And so you're just yelling across each other and nobody has any idea what the other person's really saying or feeling.
Agreed. What do you think are some of the ways that you can turn a talking at into a talking with?
Well, to be honest with you, there's no good conversations that are going to happen on social media. You need to go out into the world where real people are.
Yeah,
and talk to real people.
Too.
And when you talk to real people, you can't just go look at their profile and find things you don't like about them. You know, you have to actually engage them and find out who they are. And generally, we have a lot more in common than we think we do. And the things that are important to us are similar. We just may have different ideas of how to achieve them.
What do you think are some of the top ones on those lists? When you say you think we have a lot of ideas that are similar, what are some of those ideas?
People love their families. They want their kids to go to good schools. They don't want to have to pay a lot for their education. You know, they don't want to pay a lot for groceries. I mean, these are all
100%. But here's the part where I get, where my gears lock up. What happens when those people want those things, but they don't give a toss about you?
But if you want your legislators to vote for good schools, then people will get good schools, right?
No, because you can privatize that and people with money can buy their way into good schools.
Well, let's assume most of the people in question don't have enough money to send their kids to private school. You know what I mean?
Well, you'd have to assume that people would tribe up based on financial, you'd see a class system.
Well, right. That's
what we're teetering into,
that's
you
the
think?
Problem. We're not teetering into it. I mean, this is a class war. And even the people who can afford to send their kids to private school are still in the same class as us. I will say that. But you're right. That's why I said achieving those things is where a lot of people differ, right? Everyone wants their kid to go to a good school, but how do we
make it so we
achieve that?
Yeah. Well, I think what I'm hearing you say is that ideally we'd achieve that in a larger group of us as possible. How do you get through to the people, and I guess some of these people would be in the talking at category, how do you get through to them enough to say, hey, even though you can take care of you and everything's cool for you, it would actually be better for you and all of us if you could see doing better for me as important as doing better for you?
I don't have the definitive answer to that, but I do know that we will all be better off if we participate in our local communities and meet all of our neighbors and talk about stuff like this.
Yeah, love that. Know? Love that. What do you think are good ways to operate that, though? It seems like, I mean, you know, we have such a disjointed social network.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. There's some places have neighborhood associations, you know, or other stuff like that. I mean, if you have kids in school, you will probably meet their parents.
Yeah, you do.
Oh no, you have to, there definitely is some effort that you have to put into it, you know, find local community events or hang out at the library. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I guess the reason why I'm asking is because I guess I'm wondering what the operative actions are behind changing these sentiments, because otherwise we're going to continue to silo off, and the problems that you identify in social media that were the impetus to write this book, as you've seen manifest in reality. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm kind of more asking, you know, how we pump the brakes on that. And, you know, dividing us into five countries is one way, but then we're almost bigger silos. And, you know, when you do...
I'm fine if there's a country of people who all want the same thing, and now they can all work for it. You know what I mean? Unless it's blowing up one of the other countries.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
But you know what I mean? I don't have to agree with everybody to want everyone to have more power in their group.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You're right. And you just said a super powerful thing. I don't have to agree with everybody. That in and of itself is kind of a strange mentality when we're talking about our desires for ourselves in life. How can you talk about your desires in life and care about the next man? This is kind of not to put the little bow on this, but when the finer point to all this is capitalism, I'm not really incentivized to care about if I have to take from you, because that's how I get mine.
And I think that is one of the worst parts of capitalism, is that it makes people very individualistic.
Right.
And make them not have to care about other people. So
right.
Just another reason we need to chop that down.
So how do you supplant that? I mean, I think it's kind of
funny.
Well,
you can't make people feel a certain way. You know what I mean? All you can do, which I try to do, is be an example.
Yes. Amen to that. Respect
you know?
For that.
And put stuff out there to try to teach them. Unfortunately, as we know, most of the people who read this won't be the ones who really need it. But that's just but again, the more people who are living by example and refuse to let, you know, I was just thinking today, my friends who were like, I'm going to be mad because they're mean.
Yeah.
Like, I don't let other people dictate how I act. I'm a kind person. So when you are mean to me, I am not going to be mean because that's not who I am. You know what I mean? So you're kind of letting, you know, I think there's some saying by somebody, like, if you can let someone anger you, you let them control you.
Right.
So we don't have to let other people control who we are and how we act. You know, we should reject that.
Do you see the rejection of that coming more in the form of altruism or increased empathy?
Well, it doesn't have to come in any form, because I tell people, you don't have to respond. So,
well, even
it
if
can
it
be silence. Silence is a good way to not, you know, respond to angry people.
True. What?
Empathy is hard for some people.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, but taking that silence in and of itself is an action. Do you see that as an empathetic action?
In some ways, it's about self-preservation.
True.
Right? Not letting yourself get angry and stuff. But it's just about not continuing the cycle. Also, you know, anger is something you pass on. You pass it on to someone else, they get angry, then they are angry with someone else who gets angry. So you're kind of stopping a cycle.
Right. I guess the biggest kink in the slinky that you get on that is, once the cycle is stopped, you have to have a new cycle. We're humans. We have to have some stupid color by number to follow. Well, so what's what?
Well, you can be kind to the person who is mean to you.
Yeah. No.
See how that.
Yeah, obviously. I'm with you there. I'm talking more on the societal scale now, cycling back to the capitalism portion of the show.
Right.
Because and this is why I asked about altruism, because if you don't have capitalism, you have to have, I guess, presumably.
But you can still have commerce without capitalism.
Okay. So then that's my question. How do you see that working?
Well, I mean, before capitalism, there was cottage industry, right? And we still have mom and pop shops. Those aren't people out exploiting resources and people, for the most part. We can still sell things but not all things, you know? I mean, iPhones use a lot of minerals that are create a lot of pollution, and I think are sometimes mined by children. I don't know.
Yeah.
So there are some things that are worse than others to make and sell. I mean, but again, the forces that control that are not currently within our control.
And as long as we're going to have to vote somebody into representative leadership, they'll never be in our control beyond that vote.
Well, yes. And thus far, the only options we're ever offered are deeply embedded in the capitalist system.
Right.
So we don't get to vote for or against capitalism, right? We're always voting for capitalism, just in whatever, you know,
to benefit whom.
Right, exactly.
To benefit whom.
Exactly.
But it just begs the question, what do we do differently? Because you said cottage industry, we still have these mom and pop industries, and I actually come from a really entrepreneurial background in small town Wisconsin and all this, so I do have a real fondness for that sort of thing.
Right, so we have to support them.
But here's my tell me how you feel about this one.
Yeah.
That, it seems like we really hit the plateau of that, and then we built a better mousetrap, and then that better mousetrap became Walmart, and now that doesn't work.
You keep saying better mousetrap.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's better. Well, but yes, we...
Well, invariably, I say better presumably under the guise that I don't think anybody took deliberate action thinking it was going to make things worse for them.
You mean shopping there?
No, I mean all of the entrepreneurs who eventually grew into Walmart.
Oh, right.
I mean, we graduated beyond cottage industry, and whether or not this is a good thing or a bad thing.
And the thing is, you're forgiven because you have another reason, but I don't, like many of us, just wanted things faster or cheaper or more convenient, or even knowing, like, the people who deliver the things are not getting paid well.
Right.
The people making the things probably aren't either, and then businesses are being exploited by Walmart.
And polluting the planet from end to end.
So, yeah, a lot of that was us being like, I shouldn't have to wait for that, or, you know, just all these conveniences. So that's coming back to bite us in the ass.
Yeah, convenience can do that. Convenience can be the cotter pin to laziness in a way. But I'm more talking about how, irrespective of if Amazon ever comes to be, our retail situation ballooned to Walmart. I just see a Walmart because that's the nth degree of retail. So every mom and pop, presumably, any mom and pop that was functioning at any point in time, if they could have made money, more money, they would have. The Waltons just became, I made more money than I could have, and I would have, and I could have, and I would have, until it spiraled out of control.
Right. I don't think I don't think every mom and pop would become Walmart if they wanted, if they could.
No, but they would certainly be bigger. Nobody ever says, I want to make less money. I guess that's what I'm saying.
I hear what you're saying. Yeah, but I think it's a certain type of person who will do the exploitive things to become Walmart. Right?
Yeah, true, because that's the quickest route to that. But in theory, someone could operate morally and ethically and grow to a size we don't know of.
Theoretically, yes. But if you are paying people like a living wage and stuff, I mean, you're not going to get that big. And it would take you way too long.
Why do you feel that way?
Because that's how numbers work. Like, if you paid, I mean, I'm sure they pay the very minimum that they can, which is like $7.25 an hour, unless they're in a state that has a higher minimum wage. But you can't just pay people $20 an hour and become Walmart, you know?
No.
Somewhere there has to be more profit taken, right? So that's when you pay people less and try to exploit the companies you get the product from.
So how do you feel? So I guess I have to ask you this part first. Are you in favor of increasing a federal minimum wage?
You mean so people can actually live when they work 40 hours a week? Yes, I am.
Yeah, sure. Whatever it means.
Wasn't it supposed to, it's $7.25, right?
I believe that's the federal amount, yeah.
Yes.
Is there ever any part of you that fears that or at all foresees that? And I'm just curious. I don't have a horse in this race at all.
Yeah.
That if people were to be paid more money, it would just allow more exploitation of them. It would just be more money for them to take since the up funnel is already turned on.
No, because when people get paid more money, they have more choices in life, and it would be much harder to exploit them, I think. Because they wouldn't, if everyone had to pay like $20 an hour, then you could go somewhere else and get a job that paid your bills.
Right. And I my self-disclosure part is I am for American-made products. When I ran a recording studio, I proudly stocked all record, and that's hard to do. And I would put on my little flyers, we proudly use made in America products.
Nice.
So I am for that. I'm not against foreign things, but I do like to support American-made things. Mm-hmm. But I have, and because of this, I have experienced the cycle of all of this stuff costs inherently more, and this is what I'm paying for it. And I don't get paid anymore because I'm still in the 725 bar landscape here. Mm-hmm. What do you think, and for the people that aren't proponents of raising the minimum wage, what do you say to the people that are like, well, if we pay people more, then we're just going to drive up the prices more, and inherently we're just going to be back to, I hate to bring this one back, but we're going to be at a zero-sum game again.
But we've already seen that they're going to raise the prices no matter what.
Right.
So
exactly, but doesn't that mean
so
like
that's just an excuse? And maybe they're marking things up 75% and they could just mark them up 65%, right? To make up for paying people more.
True, true. But in a capitalist world, especially if you're a public traded company, you have a fiduciary duty and you can't do that. Like, you actually can't do that.
Okay, that was a pretty terrible thing we did also.
Yeah. So how do you unravel that one? Because literally, if you were...
Well, but a small business isn't going to be a publicly traded company. So most companies don't have to worry about that.
No, but the ones swinging swords cutting everybody's heads off right now are publicly traded companies.
Yeah. Then they would raise their prices, I'm sure.
Yeah. So is it ultimately a legislative backstop that has to happen on both ends for the people that are...
And also, we shop in different places.
What do you see those as?
The ones who are not raising prices when they have to pay their employees more. or the ones that don't have a fiduciary duty to do that. I mean, I try not to shop at those companies anyway because their fiduciary duty is to charge me more
right.
for no apparent reason, right? They don't have to have even a reason.
Well, they're legally bound to their shareholders.
Right. So I don't really want to give them any money if I don't have to.
Yeah. Well, unless you're a shareholder and you think you're getting it back somehow.
Sure.
And I have heard that investment strategy. Buy all the things. Buy stock in the things that you own because you know they're making money. It seems a little bit backwards, but hey, you know, whatever you're into, I suppose. But how do you think average Joe does that, though? I mean, we are so entrenched in, especially in rural areas. Walmart's the only place you can go. Amazon for disabled people in rural areas is way beyond convenient. It's really upped the quality of life.
But there are other companies that will deliver to you.
I can tell you, there definitely are. But being that, just from my personal anecdotal experience, it's exponentially more difficult. It's exponentially more difficult. If you're talking about the things that you're doing to try to live your life, if you're talking about ordering some jeans and it doesn't matter when they get here, yeah, that's cool. But, you know, when you're talking about delivering my staples, which in the past nobody did, like literally nobody did, it's...
When you say staples, do you mean groceries?
Yeah, I mean... anything from groceries to medications to my laundry detergent to I needed.
Well, what about a local grocery store?
I don't want to walk all my food home.
No, I mean them delivering it.
Oh, sure. Certainly that's an option, yeah. But you get taxed out the ass for that. I mean, you get taxed beyond belief for
what
that.
What do you mean?
For starters, you don't pay the in-store price and you got to pay the fees to be part of the club to get the delivery. So it's like, why do I got to get taxed because I'm disabled?
But you're saying this is the world we want, and we're going to keep supporting.
No. What I'm saying is, with everything bad, everything ubiquitously, Mother Nature on down.
Yes.
With everything bad, there are some good things, and I'm grateful that I've been able to experience some of the good things that do have many atrocious heads on this serpent, and I'm with you 1,000% on that. But being that it does increase the quality of my life, and it's easy for me to see how it can do it for everybody else, how do we keep those parts?
I'm not sure we get to keep all the parts.
So we just have to...
But at least...
I mean, how do we not throw the baby out with the bathwater?
I'm afraid they are one and the same.
Ah.
In many ways. Again, there are other companies who we can get to fill some of that void, you know? I mean, at the very least, I think that's what we need to be focused on. Like, I don't... and
through, like, small business grants and stuff like that?
I don't have any issues, but, like, I... trying to get groceries delivered anymore. And when I do, I tip the person like a crazy amount because
awesome.
I know they're not getting paid, you know?
That's really gracious.
They're going out in the rain or the heat to get my groceries that I'm normally just too tired to go get. But I've kind of just stopped doing that because I don't feel good about it. So I've been ordering things from the manufacturer instead of Amazon, and it's totally fine. Like, almost anything I want, I can just go to the manufacturer. And usually I get free shipping. And there's usually a coupon code somewhere online that I can find to get a discount.
And it's especially nice when you can find the Amazon resellers that are small businesses to go directly to those people for sure.
Yeah, I mean, depending on what your definition of small business is. But yeah.
Well, I guess I'm at the legal definition of small business, you know, where you have to have 100 less employees and
right.
make less than $100 gajillion a minute.
Right. Yeah. Their definition of small business is pretty big.
Yeah. I was going to say the bar is pretty high.
Yeah. So, yeah, I just, unfortunately, some of this stuff like helped create this monster. And at some point, if we don't want that monster, you know, we're going to have to find alternatives.
And, like, do you feel that the government can have a role in that through, like, grant programs and things? Or you think this is back to more community-based, we got to start small, real small? This would take a village type thing.
I don't even know what our government's purpose is anymore.
Fair enough.
I hesitate to say they are going to help. But definitely, you know, community resources, helping local small businesses, and even time banks and things like that, you know, we...
What's that?
Other than a time bank?
Yeah.
A time bank is where you put value on people's unvalued skills. I don't know if there's one in Sarasota, but there's one in St. Pete. You can provide or receive services from people, like a ride to the airport, and get time bank credits in return that you can then use to have someone come weed your garden.
Dang, that's an interesting plan.
Yes.
That's cool.
And sometimes there's goods exchanges, but it just, again, you can go help someone and then you get something in return, you know, that you can then use on something you need help with.
That's a cool concept. I've never heard of that before. Time bank. I love that.
Yeah. So stuff like that, where we don't have to buy everything new. Obviously, groceries and stuff, we do have to buy new, but we don't have to buy everything new. Obviously, lots of people shop at thrift shops. I have friends who are dumpster divers, and they get, like, brand new stuff from the dumpsters of businesses.
I'm an eBay guy.
So, yeah, eBay is another way. Again, we do things at a convenience that even cost us more, actually. You know?
Oh, yeah.
So we can reevaluate our consumer habits to better align with, you know, the outcomes we want to see.
So we don't end up the third bodega from the sun.
Not sure we're going to avoid that at this point, but
I guess we could maybe be a hospitable bodega.
You know what they call us, the meth lab below Canada.
Well, let's get you out of here on something fun. This is actually a question that I was asking people around when you were in here the first time, and it got retired. But since it was good to go when you were here the first time, and I think you're a perfect person to ask this question to, I would like to ask you the retired fun question.
Okay.
If I gave you 10,000 billboards right now to put across the United States, and they can say one thing on them, and somebody answered this with a website where they had a bunch more things to say, so all answers are free game. If you had one thing to say on your billboard, what would it be?
It would say, defund billionaires now, with this website, defundbillionaires.now.
Too easy. See, I knew you'd have a good answer for that. That's why I was like, that one can come back for you. Well, Elsie, I couldn't thank you enough for coming back down here. I'm so grateful to hear from you. I appreciate all your opinions and your insights. And I look forward to doing it again sometime. We got another book or something monumental goes down in the world, we can celebrate or commiserate, one of the two.
Sweet. Sounds great.
Thank you.
Thanks.